It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Have you ever set your keys down and moments later forgotten where they were? Have you ever remembered an event in your life and found out that someone else who was there remembered it completely differently? Those are just two quirks in our complicated system of human memory. Our next guest is a memory researcher. In his new book, he shares the latest research about the science of memory and how we might harness that knowledge to improve our lives and understand ourselves a little better. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think of your memory as being particularly good or bad? What sorts of things do you find it easy to remember or harder to remember? Have you found little secrets, tips to help you remember something? Say, attach that name to a face. You could help me out with that. Do you have a question about how memory does and doesn't work? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Charan Ranganath is a professor of psychology and director of the Center for Neuroscience at the University of California at Davis. He's the author of the new book, Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. Charan, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, I don't want to spoil the end of the book, but the answer to the question of why we remember, why humans have the capacity for memory in the first place, isn't completely clear. Why is that such an open question still?
Well, you know, there's the big answer to the question, which is I believe that memory is about understanding what's happening now and being able to anticipate what could happen in the future. But that's kind of an assumption. And in general with science, I find that you really the whole process is about getting data and then asking better and better questions. So to some extent, why we remember is a big question, but then to really answer it well, you want to go into the smaller, more specific questions as well.
We sometimes think of our memory as, I don't know, like a camera. We've stored all this data and we just dig into those files and access it. That's completely wrong in a lot of ways. You say in your book that our brains are designed to forget. Why is forgetting such an important part of our memory?
Well, I liken it to imagine you're trying to design a vehicle, right? And so you could design a vehicle that's going to carry around a bunch of junk, right? In which case, you're not going to get good handling. You're not going to get good fuel economy. But on the other hand, you could design a car that's more for performance. And you could do it in a way that's like economical, but it can still stop on a dime and it's got very fast performance. And our brain's taken that approach as opposed to the haul around a bunch of junk approach. So on one hand, we tend to forget a lot of information. In fact, the majority of the details of our lives will be reduced to like a much smaller fraction of that within even a couple of days. But on the other hand, that information, we tend to be able to use it very effectively. So we make the most of what's there.
There are different kinds of memory, if I'm reading your book right. Information, remembering a particular date or fact or something is one kind of memory. Remembering our events in our lives can be a different kind of memory. How do those two things work differently?
Yeah, so there's that remembering, having the knowledge about things that happen, like being able to just know information about, say, what you do with a cell phone or something like that. That's actually, maybe that's not the best example. Being able to know information about, let's say, British history or something if you studied it in school. On the other hand, there's your memory for a trip to Britain that you might have taken. And so that would be associated not with any particular general information, but it would be more this experience of being able to travel back to a time and place in your mind. In fact, Endel Tulving called episodic memory as a kind of mental time travel. And so this kind of memory is different because it's specific to a particular time and place. Whereas semantic memory is some knowledge that we can use anywhere, anytime, in any place.
Charan Ranganath is with us. His new book is called Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. You can join in. If you have a question about memory, a story about memory to share, join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Charan, you're a memory researcher. You're also a musician and a music fan. Reading your book and your chapter titles put like 80 different songs in my head over the last couple of days. There's something uniquely powerful, it seems like, when it comes to music and how it can trigger, enhance, provoke memories. What is it about music?
Well, I think there's so many factors, but I'll just give you a few. So one is that music evokes emotions. And so as a result, you know, these emotional experiences are the ones that we tend to prioritize in memory. So that alone gives us an advantage. But we also have, we uniquely associate music with particular times in our life. So I don't know if you've had this, like, have you ever had a time where, like a summer or something, where you just listen to a song and then you stopped listening to it after that? Have you experienced something like that?
Oh, so much. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's like you have this song that you just listened to for that period. And so now that song is like the soundtrack to that time in your life. And when you hear it, it can evoke some kind of sense of what it was like to be at that place in time. And once you're mentally back in that place in time, you now have access to all of these memories that you might not have been able to see before. And so that's one of the reasons why music is so evocative. Another is that we tend to remember certain times in our life, which are the times where our sense of who we are is being formed. So like times from adolescence all the way up to, let's say, adulthood. And so that period of time is also when our musical tastes tend to really become quite focused. So I think that's another thing as well, is that we like to look back on those parts of our life.
Now, I started the conversation mentioning something I think has happened to a lot of people. Here's my keys. Just set them down on the counter here. Now, sometimes I'm like a lot of people. I might set them down somewhere in my house and then forget where I set them and then go nuts trying to find them when I need to leave the house again. There's a lot of complicated stuff going on, and there are ways to help us do better. Talk us through that finding our keys scenario.
Well, so the problem with finding your keys and the reason it's so hard is that you have so many competing memories of places that you've kept your keys, right? So unless you have a habit of putting your keys in the same place, and I certainly don't. So what happens is that every time I'm looking for my keys, I'm just stuck with all of these different competing memories for it. And it's not a very unique memory. Adding to that is the problem that we're often distracted, either because we're in our own heads, which is me most of the time, to be honest, or because we're getting distracted by alerts on our phones or, you know, other devices, for instance. And then there's, of course, the things that you can't avoid, like, for instance, any parent of a newborn child, they're crying, you have to drop everything and go take care of that. So there's lots of these distractions that move us away from actually being able to focus on what we're doing in the moment. As far as how to go back and find those keys later, the best advice I can give you is to try to mentally retrace your steps. And I know it's kind of a cliche, but it really is true. If you can bring yourself in your mind, not to the point where you put down your keys, but the points leading up to it. Like, just imagine what happened when I opened the door and what was I thinking about at the time. Sometimes that can ignite the memory because you're now activating that context in your head.
And related to that, and correct me if I'm not reading you right, what we sometimes think of memory decline, say over time, I'm getting worse at remembering where I put my keys. It's not necessarily that, you know, I'm losing that ability to, put that data into my brain. It's that I'm losing my ability to filter out some of those distractions you were talking about. Do I have that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So as we get older, what happens is that there's an area of the brain called the prefrontal cortex, and it's really important for allowing us to use memory to get what we need when we need it. And so the prefrontal cortex's function tends to go down as we get older. And so as a result, we struggle a little bit more to find the right information when we need it. Sometimes we get the wrong information, and we're a little bit slow to pick up the mistakes when that happens.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Fidel is with us in Milwaukee. Fidel, hi. What did you want to bring up?
Hi there. Yes, I wanted to bring up a video on YouTube I saw regarding chimpanzees. I remember seeing this video. These chimpanzees were shown these numbers on the screen, and they were tapping. After a couple seconds, they were meant to tap what the numbers were showing. And I thought that was fascinating. You know, after a couple seconds, they could already remember what the numbers were. And so I don't know if maybe the speaker could maybe speak on, you know, differences between human memory and either our ancestors or how it's evolved over time.
Interesting, Fidel. And I know you've looked at sea lions and mice and I think other primates as well. How do their memories compare and contrast with ours?
Well, there's so much there. So, I mean, I first of all, just to expand on Fidel's question, there was an experiment that was done where they teach these chimpanzees math. And what they found was that they could actually be faster in some ways than people could. And part of the issue is that these chimpanzees were trained to do this task over and over and over again. And humans, if they're trained to become experts on any particular task, are amazing at it. So if you look at an expert chess player, they can just look at a chessboard and immediately commit that information to memory. So expertise buys you an awful lot. I think what makes human memory so effective is that we can grab pieces of information that don't correspond to what we knew, that don't correspond to anything we've ever experienced before. And that's what makes humans especially effective. That kind of episodic memory, I can't say that it doesn't happen in other animals. There are birds, for instance, that can actually show this exceptional ability to remember where and when something happened. Really cool study of birds where a bird is being watched by another bird while they bury their food for the winter. And then as soon as the other bird goes away, they return back to that spot, dig it up, and put it somewhere else because they remembered that this happened and they were being watched. And so they needed to move it so the other bird wouldn't steal their food. So there's a lot we don't know about how rich animals' memories are. You mentioned the sea lions, and that was just a fun study to be part of, where what we found was that sea lions are exceptional foragers, and so they have great memory for where they get their food from. But if you look at sea lions that have eaten, for instance, toxic algae in these red tides, or they eat fish that eat these algae, they can get damaged to parts of the brain that actually affect memory. And so these are often the animals that wash up on the shore. They're washing up to the shore because they've lost that ability to remember where they are. And so to some extent, they resemble what happens to people in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease, where they're sort of floating in space and time.
Charan Ranganath is with us from University of California, Davis. He researches memory there. His new book is called Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. You could join in at 800-642-1234. I'm going to put my keys back in my pocket before I forget where I put them. How about you? Do you have little tips to help you remember where you put your keys, the name that goes along with that face? What is the earliest memory you have? Have you ever remembered an event differently from someone else who experienced it with you? Do you have questions about how memory works? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Charan Ranganath, professor of psychology, director of neuroscience at the University of California at Davis, talking about his new book, Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about memory and how it works? A story to share about a time when you maybe doubted your memory for one reason or another? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Brian is with us in Duluth. Brian, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what'd you want to tell us about, Brian?
Yeah, right. I tell you what, I had cancer, prostate cancer a little over a year ago diagnosed, and then chemotherapy, radiation to the spine, which is CNS, central nervous system. And then I'm on androgen deprivation therapy indefinitely. And my understanding is that chemotherapy, all of those three things, spine is the central nervous system as well, can cause memory issues. Doesn't necessarily, but it does. It can. And it did in me. Mm-hmm. And so what seems to have happened is that I have kind of plateaued an improvement there, and I think that's because the androgen deprivation therapy is kind of a ceiling on my memory.
Interesting. Brian, thanks for the call. Now, Sharon, of course, you can't give specific medical advice for Brian, but is this common? Cancer treatments, hormone treatments, things like that, having an impact on our memory?
Yes, definitely. There's something that your caller talked about that reminded me of work on chemo brain, which is basically during chemotherapy, people have a lot of trouble remembering. Some of it is related to the prefrontal cortex that we talked about before. And so, again, this idea that you have trouble being able to focus on what's relevant at the time. And so that gives you the sense of being in a mental fog. I mean, in general, one of the things we're finding is that things that affect the immune system, well, the immune system acts in the brain. And so those inflammatory conditions like long COVID can also affect memory. And I'm sure some of your listeners who are struggling with that, you know, it's a very real thing that these conditions can affect memory. The good thing is that there's some evidence suggests that this can be reversible. And in fact, your caller might be reassured to find that one of the world's memory champions is a memory athlete named Scott Hagwood. He got into memory competitions because he was doing chemotherapy, and he started to learn all these memory skills from a book that he had read. So it's definitely possible to work better with what you have.
Thanks a lot for that call. Good luck to you, Brian. And I want to leap on that phrase there, memory athlete. Until I read your book, I didn't know there were competitive memory events.
Yeah, there's a famous one who I mentioned in the book named Yenya Wintersoul. And she actually memorized an entire IKEA catalog. And so these are the kinds of things that they ask these memory athletes to do, is just these incredible feats of remembering arbitrary, like you might give them an entire deck of cards and give them like a certain amount of time to just be able to form memories for the entire thing. And they're just incredible at this stuff. And the reason is not because they were born with some perfect photographic memory, but they just learn skills just like any other athlete does.
Thanks for the call, Brian. We're talking to Charan Ranganath about his new book, Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. Another Brian on the line now, Brian in Madison. Brian, hi, what did you want to bring up?
Hi, so I just had a quick question about how trauma impacts memories. I was a freelance writer during the protests in 2020, some of which became riots, and noticed I have very specific and detailed moments of individual parts of those days and evenings, and the rest of it almost immediately was not remembered at all. So just kind of a question about what is the physical process that's happening there, and then also what's the utility for our memory working that way in traumatic circumstances?
Brian, thanks for the call. Charan, you've worked with people dealing with trauma, Vietnam veterans, and others. How does trauma affect our memory?
Oh, it's such a beautiful question. So one of the things that we know about memory is that during these emotionally intense experiences, like stressful experiences, as your caller described, you can get a release of both stress hormones, and sometimes you can get a fight or flight response, which is associated with a chemical called noradrenaline. And they promote plasticity in the brain, so they allow these normally transient memories to stick. But we don't necessarily remember everything from those experiences. We tend to focus on the things that were most emotionally relevant, right? So your caller might have remembered, you know, being afraid for their life at some scary moment during these protests, but not necessarily remember which shoes he was wearing at the time. And that's because it's not so relevant to the emotional part. And your caller said it beautifully that why is this? And I think the thing is that our brain is designed to prioritize our limited memories for the things that are most important. And from a biological perspective, things that give us stress, things that give us anxiety or fear are going to be the most important experiences. Because if I, you know, find a snake, or if I find a saber-toothed tiger, what, you know, caveman ancestors, I should say, it's important to know that not only that I saw those things, but I also want to know where they were so I can avoid them in the future. And so that's why I think it made sense that traumatic memories will stick around. But obviously, it can be very difficult to have these recurring traumatic memories that come back at inopportune times.
Brian, thanks for that call. I want to spend our last couple minutes with some memory hygiene. Charan, what are some good daily healthy behaviors we can do that are going to help us remember stuff better?
Well, there's the long-term things, like anything that affects your body health will affect your brain health, which will affect your memory. So a lot of the things that we think of as being good, especially for aging, exercise, a healthy diet, and so forth, are going to be things that can help you age better with memory. Even things like we're just finding out things like people who have hearing problems using hearing aids can help preserve memory function, or things like even gum disease can potentially affect memory function. We're still learning a lot. But in terms of the everyday memory hygiene for anyone, the things I think that I would suggest more than anything else is to like remove your distractions and do not multitask. And what I mean by that is we're often doing something, but then interrupted. For instance, we get it in our own heads, or we're interrupted because, you know, there's an incident with family or something, like child is upset, you need to drop everything and talk to them. But then there's the things that we do to ourselves, like, you know, phone alerts, for instance, or if you have a watch that tells you every time you get a text message. These are the things that are everyday memory blockers, because once you start focusing on that email or that text message and you come back, what happens is that it actually takes your brain a little bit of extra processing just to get you back on track. And that has a cost in terms of both what you're doing in the moment, but also memory. And so often we think we're being very efficient by checking our text messages and then talking and then checking email and then talking. But in fact, what happens is we actually are losing memory for all these experiences. And so you're much better off taking your time to daydream, then taking your time to do email, and then taking your time to be in the moment in a conversation rather than flipping back and forth in between.
Charon, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Charon Ranganath is professor of psychology and director of the neuroscience lab at the University of California at Davis, and he joined us for a look at his new book, Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network.